Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm Jonathan Strickland, and today we're going to do another behind the scenes here at HowStuffWorks. And of course, since this is Tech Stuff, we're going to be looking at a technical aspect of it. And to that end, I brought in our super producer extraordinaire, Noel. Hi, Noel.
Hey, Jonathan. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, normally you are on the other side of a window in our podcast studio, where a very fancy microphone hovers above your head.
Sort of like looking into a terrarium or something.
Yeah, and you're wearing at least one set of headphones, if not two. Mm-hmm.
I lost my earbuds, so lately I've been having two full sets of headphones on at once, and it looks kind of insane to people walking by.
It is a little crazy. While an episode is recording within these walls, mm-hmm. you are typically also editing another episode at the same time.
It's true.
So before we get too far into this, let our listeners know, which shows do you edit and produce?
Sure. So I do Tech Stuff, your other show, Forward Thinking. Mm-hmm. I do Stuff You Missed in History Class. I do Stuff to Blow Your Mind. I do Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. And I do Car Stuff. Am I missing anything?
I think that's everything. So really, Stuff You Should Know is the only one.
Excuse me. Stuff Mom Never Told You as well.
Right. So Stuff You Should Know is like the only one you don't do.
The only one I don't do.
So Jerry, the Wonder Producer, handles Stuff You Should Know. Noel handles everything else.
I do guest on Stuff You Should Know when Jerry's out, though. And
that's true.
I've gotten some very kind shout outs from the Stuff You Should Know army.
They are nothing if not passionate. You know, they really appreciate the work that goes into these shows, as does the Tech Stuff audience. We're mm-hmm. really appreciative of that.
For sure.
So, why don't you walk us through what it's like to produce an episode on your side of mm-hmm. it? Because I've talked extensively a couple times about what it takes on my side to create an episode. So whether it's a Tech Stuff or a Stuff Mom Never Told You or whatever, what are the steps that are involved?
Sure. I mean, we recently got some pretty great new digs here in our new office at Ponce City Market, which, you know, involves for me a much more soundproof environment. We have like an actual studio space that's treated for sound, both with acoustic tiles and also like in the construction, they actually put in some sound dampening material. So there's a window installed and I'm on the other side of the window with a talkback mic so I can communicate with the folks that are doing the show, in case we need to stop or talk about anything. But the most basic show involves more or less just recording everyone, and then I record through several SM7B Shure microphones, which are actually very popular for using in like studio work for recording bands. Michael Jackson used them exclusively on Thriller. It's like a really clean, great mic for recording close up and for getting kind of like a really intimate sound. Mm-hmm. It's what they call a dynamic microphone, whereas a condenser microphone picks things up much farther away.
Sure.
With the dynamic mic, you tend to cut down on a lot of room noise, and it's just a lot more of a direct kind of intimate sound. So radio in general tend to use dynamic mics, and the SM7 is one of the most popular ones.
So, yeah, the dynamic mics, and I've talked about this before on Tech Stuff as well, it's the type where if you get off track of the mic from too far off in either direction, it no longer picks up your voice as well. Mm-hmm. So if you ever hear like a dramatic drop in someone's volume in a podcast, well, first of all, that rarely happens because we usually will catch it beforehand. But secondly, if it does happen, it's generally because a person who's talking has somehow like leaned too far over or has otherwise, they're no longer addressing the mic directly. Sure. Condenser mics pick up things from all over, like you were saying. For a long time, I was using a condenser mic at home for whenever I had to record stuff at home. And I remember at the time my dogs, if they were running across the floor, you could hear their nails, their claws clicking.
Yeah, or things like the air conditioning, just like room tone is amplified significantly. So with these dynamics, you know, as long as you're kind of up close to the mic, you're not going to get as much of that. And then there's also processing that I do after the fact that kind of cuts down on some of that. But
right. So what are you recording into? What other equipment are you using besides mm-hmm. the microphones?
Yeah, we just got a kind of a new setup since we moved into this new space, which is great. So all the mics are fed through like a cable snake, which is basically just like kind of a thicker cable that can incorporate several microphone lines into one. And so mm-hmm. that goes through the wall. And then it feeds into an Apogee Quartet, which is a 4-input what they call an audio interface, a sound interface, by the company Apogee, which has been around for a long time and is really known for having excellent analog to digital converters, because that, you know, that's what's going on when you're taking an analog signal from a mic and then you're plugging it into one of these devices and recording it digitally. It behooves you to have a really good conversion so that you're not losing anything in the process.
Right.
Then that is going into, we used Adobe Audition, which is just a part of the Adobe Creative Suite, to record, and every channel of audio goes on its own independent track. So if we have a show like Forward Thinking where there are three hosts, there are times where the levels may need to be adjusted independently of one another. So having them on their own separate track makes that possible. Whereas if it was all recorded in one thing, then it would all be kind of mixed and you would not be able to actually make adjustments.
It also means if one of us is making like some weird noise that mm-hmm. we don't realize, you could actually mute that on that track.
Just kill it. Yep.
Yeah. And speaking of weird noises, one of the things that we're going to treat you guys to a little bit later is something that Noel has creatively done with some of the myriad of weird noises that have been produced into these microphones, normally unconsciously. And, we'll get to that a little bit later. All right. So the microphones you've talked about the processing, the conversion of that from analog to digital, and using Adobe. So once something is recorded, what is your next step?
So I don't actually edit the shows on the machine, the computer that I record them on. So I actually have a Dropbox account that I use. And so I take all of the files, the individual files, and then I export them to my Dropbox. And then I can access that on my laptop that I use, so I can edit when I'm in the office or when I'm out. And I bring them back into another instance of Adobe. But I use several what they call audio plugins on each track to kind of process and bring up the levels and normalize the level so that no one's louder, significantly louder than anybody else, and use what's called compression to kind of, you set basically a compressor, you set a threshold and you say, once the audio reaches this level, I want it to be reduced a little bit. So that kind of is a good way of like making sure everything is sort of operating on the same volume so that something doesn't just pop out all of a sudden and is much louder than something else. So you kind of have an instance of these compressors on every track and you set a threshold, which is like the maximum volume. And once the audio reaches that level, it kind of like gently, you know, tones it down a little bit so that like you kind of have an understanding of what the maximum is for everybody.
Right. Yeah. So, that is really important with things like a speech, like mm-hmm. lots of spoken word type stuff where you have multiple users. Obviously with music, that's one of those things that you try to use in limited amounts because one of the things compression does is it reduces the distance between the softest and loudest moments. And the more you compress, the more samey everything gets.
Yeah, it's sort of this thing of music, which I mean, I also produce a lot of my own music, as well. It's what they call the loudness wars. So like, if you opened up an audio track and like put it into Adobe Audition where you can actually see it as a waveform, 9 times out of 10, you're going to see, you know, a waveform typically has a peak and a valley. So like a maximum volume and a minimum volume. But with modern music these days, you kind of tend to see it all as a big giant block because they've compressed it so much that there is no dynamics. So there's hardly any difference between the quietest parts and the loudest parts. With speech, it's more of like a band-aid. You're kind of just using it to sort of like make sure nothing is unpleasant for someone who's listening to it on different systems. So it's like now all of a sudden someone's screaming in their ear. With music, it's obviously a different problem.
Right. So with those waveforms, mm-hmm. when you're looking at that, I'm assuming, cause I've noticed this with a lot of audio engineers, that you can look at a waveform and kind of get an idea of what was an intentional noise versus something that someone's just done accidentally, without even having listened to it yet. I imagine that happens fairly frequently. Like particularly for small things. I know that I work on a podcast outside of work. And often I will be looking at the waveform, and one of the first things I want to do is take out any annoying little things that would be distracting in the middle of someone talking, and like someone clicking on keys or something. Mm-hmm. And I can almost always tell immediately just by the size of the little blip mm-hmm. in the waveform that, like, yeah, I think I just need to get rid of that. I don't even need to listen to it because, one, I already know it's going to be this noise, and two, it kind of creeps me out. So I'm just going to take that out.
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of times, like a click or like a somebody slamming their fist down on a table or something, it just looks different visually yeah. than like a natural speech pattern would look. So like we call it kind of like a spike. So like sort of like a momentary spike in the waveform, which kind of just looks like a straight line.
Right.
Whereas, you know, a natural pattern of speech where someone's talking and not really stopping, it looks a lot more rounded and kind of like, you know, you can definitely tell the difference between the two for sure.
Right. Well, then let me ask you this. Do you have anything set so that like, are there any thresholds set for noise where anything below a certain amount just doesn't even get picked up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's called a noise gate. And it can be tricky, and I don't use it on everything, but on Forward Thinking where there's three mics, it just tends to there's potential to introduce a lot more noise because you've got three open mics and people talking. There tends to be bleed on the other mics with what they call it when you hear the indirect sound of someone talking on one of the nearby mics on a mic that's not being used. And once you start getting a lot of that, you start getting issues with phase where you start to, things kind of start to sound a little swishy and weird kind of. Mm-hmm. So when you use a noise gate, you set a threshold on the low end. Whereas the compression, you set it more on the high end. So when something falls below a certain threshold, it just kills the channel. It kills the audio, but there's different like little adjustments you can do so it's not jarring. There's like an attack and a release. So like, for example, you wouldn't want the noise gate to kick in when I just get a little bit quieter.
Right.
You would want to, and even if it did, you would want it to do so kind of gently and not just be like super jarring and like make everything just dead silent.
Right, right.
So there's different little parameters that you can mess with to kind of make it a little more natural.
So when you are in the editing mode, typically I assume this involves you not just listening for when we mess up and go back and do something again. So you have to, there's an art to clipping out anything where we've made a mistake and we've gone back. Not that I do that on tech stuff, but I've heard at some of the other podcasts it happens occasionally where you have to go and take that part out, and then you have to essentially have the bit that came right before and the bit that came after mesh together. Mm-hmm. So tell me about that process. Is it easy? Does the software do a lot of the work? Is there any massaging you have to do?
It really doesn't do any of the work. Like what I do is, so I'm looking at like what's called a multi-track view where you have, you know, Jonathan's track here, Lauren's track underneath that, and then Joe's track there, and they're all lined up, and so you can see when one person's talking and when another person starts, etc. So what you have to do is you end up making, like, if I'm going to cut out a mistake or even just like a cough or like a sound that happens, maybe you are saying something and you kind of pause, and then maybe you didn't pick up with the very beginning of what you were saying, you just kind of like pick up with what you would have said next. So what I end up doing is I'll make a mark where I want the beginning of the edit to be. This is in the software. It's just like a digital kind of a locator. So you make a little point and it shows it to you so you can go back to that and be exactly on that spot. And then I'll make another mark for the end. And then you just cut out what's in between those. But what I end up having to do is, like, if there's a sound, like an S sound or a CH sound that starts it, to make it more natural, I'll try to keep the original starting sound and then edit that into the pickup. Whereas you might have made that S or CH sound again, I'll use the original one and then kind of like crossfade just slightly, which means you take the two bits and you combine them together, but you make it where the beginning of one fades into the next one. So there's no like audio artifact or glitch sound or anything. So
there's a possibility that if you've listened to enough How Stuff Works episodes, you've heard a word where the beginning pronunciation of that word happened minutes before before the rest of that word was spoken.
And it sounds weird, but it really does kind of make it a little more natural, because it's like, you know, folks that do these shows at How Stuff Works, they do so many shows, and it's like I try to do anything that I can. They do so much research, anything that I can to make them not have to repeat themselves too much, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Rather than like have people go back and say a whole paragraph or a whole sentence again, I try to just let it ride and do what I can to kind of like join it together and make it work. And sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it just doesn't line up, and I will maybe have to ask someone to come in and give me another word or something like that. But typically people don't make too many mistakes, and you know, some shows are different than others. Like with tech stuff, I mean, very few edits in tech stuff most of the time.
That's been sort of the history of tech stuff. In fact, way back in the day when Chris and I were doing shows, very often the show that went up was unedited, in the sense that nothing, we never stopped, went back and fixed things. If we misstated something or mispronounced something, we corrected it within the context of the show and kept going. But the longer that we've done these, the more of those little bits that we've gone back and fixed. It's funny because, being in the position I'm in, where I have guest hosts all the time, I get the chance to see the way people deal with that, right? Some people are just like, oh, I'm sorry, hang on a second. And then they'll go back into it. Some people will actually mark it with a beep. One person in particular, Mr. Ben Boland.
I know, he is like religious about that too. He'll forget to do it, and then he'll stop himself and go back and do the beep.
Yeah.
And I think that is a legacy stuff you should know.
Yeah, Josh does
thing.
It too.
Yeah,
Josh exactly. does it too. Cause I've had Josh in the studio before, and he's done a beep before. Me, I don't make mistakes, so I just keep going.
Well, it's fun too, because I mean, it's actually really helpful, because the beep, not only does it jar you out of your editing stupor where you're like, oh, okay, here's a thing that I need to listen to.
Right.
It also visually shows up, like we were talking about earlier, as something that's like sort of an anomaly.
Yeah, you start to recognize the beep, because it's usually quiet just before it, and then there's a little bit of quiet after it. So you've got this little isolated word, and you know, oh, there's something.
Let me go check on the recording real quick.
Sure. this is real time. Real-time checking. Null's probably going to be cutting all this out, but I'm going to just keep on whispering because he's actually checking to make sure it's recording. And I'm guessing it is.
Yeah.
All right, good.
Probably keep that.
Yeah, that just shows, you know, like, well, that's the thing is that we don't have anyone sitting on the other side of the window right now because right. you're in here.
No, it's true.
So we're kind of stuck this way. Yeah, we could have probably asked somebody, but everybody is super slammed.
It's
all
also
the time.
Friday.
You know. Yeah, it's a Friday too. Yeah. And on Friday, you don't want to ask anyone to do any extra work, yeah. right? It's tough enough that we're here. Mm-hmm.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So let me ask you this. Out of all the ones that you do, I don't want to call anyone out, so I'm not going to ask you whose shows need the most edits, but is it generally the same across the board, or are some of them a little more edit heavy than others?
It kind of averages out, I think, but yeah. There's definitely a few shows that involve a little bit more massaging, you know? Cause like I said, I mean, there's a lot of research that goes into this stuff and you just can't really expect people to get it perfectly the first time. And people aren't like reading scripts either.
They're right.
Like, they've got like notes that they've made and bullet points and stuff. So it's really easy to like realize that you could have said something a little bit better.
Sure.
And like the medium allows that. Like, you know,
we're not live streaming,
so you're not held to it. So why not make it the best that it can be? I don't think
right.
there's anything dishonest about that.
No, I don't think so either. I think, ultimately we're trying to create an entertaining and informative podcast. And in that effort, I think it's perfectly cromulent that we take those measures.
I love when you use that word.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I, you know, and again, it's one of those things where I don't have any problem with that. Whenever I work with anybody who does it in that way, it's actually kind of interesting to think, oh, I have an opportunity to try and get my point across more succinctly, which is my biggest problem. I'm a wordy guy. And clearly, that's another issue I can have. Because by being wordy, you overcomplicate things. Case in point right now. All right, so we've gotten through the point. You've gone through, you've done the edits, you've massaged some stuff, you've removed any extraneous noises, you've taken out any mistakes. At that point, typically, do you do anything else before you send it on for the various hosts to QA an episode?
Well, I mean, in the same way that I have these plugins on the individual tracks, I also have a mastering, I guess you could call it, a plugin on the main bus, which is the master track. So it's like you've got these individual tracks and they're all feeding into another, like, final master volume. So it's the equivalent of, like, the one knob on your stereo, you turning that all the way down. It's turning down everything that's coming in, whether it's coming through your CD or your, you know, phono jack or whatever. So that's like a master volume, master fader in like audio terms. And so what I have on that is an equalizer, which is, you know, it divides the sound up into different frequencies. And I kind of do what's called a high pass, which is where you take it's like a filter that sort of cuts out some of the low frequencies up to a certain threshold. And like a lot of times that's where a lot of the noise lives. Mm-hmm. So to kind of like do that to the final mix, it just sort of gives you a little bit of a cleaner, you know, sound without anything that you're not going to hear anyway. We're not doing like drum and bass music or like, you know, anything with like super poundy low bass. So there's no point in even having it in there because it just kind of muddles things up, especially if people are listening to it on earbuds and on different devices in their car and things like that.
Right.
And then I'll have like what's called a sonic maximizer, which is sort of like a compressor, but it's a little different. But again, you set a threshold and it sort of like raises the minimum volume of everything up to a certain point. And if the maximum volume exceeds the threshold that you set, it kind of brings it down. So it really is like a compressor, but I've always been a little uncertain about what the difference is because it certainly operates like a compressor, but it's called a sonic maximizer. And it's something that you would put like on a final product for like a song if you were making it so that it kind of like gets as loud as it can be without being too loud or too quiet.
Right. You know? And at that point, you typically send us a notice, us being the various hosts, where you have stored the now edited file. And give us the opportunity to listen to it to make sure there's nothing else on there that we might want to have addressed. Like maybe there's a point that someone made and we don't feel very strongly about it. Or maybe once in a while we'll have one of those moments where we start a sentence, go back and start again. And we have to say, oh, well, we just need to get this one little bit chopped out.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I edit so many shows and I, like you say, I definitely multitask a lot. And, you know, I often edit these shows at, double speed just so that I can like grind my way through as many of them as I possibly can. And, you know, if something is said and then said again really fast without like leaving a pause where it kind of like, you know, makes you realize, okay, this needs to come out. Yeah, I definitely miss things from time to time, but that's why we have this QA process. And it's always been in place before I was even here because, like I said, it's just such a volume of stuff that we do.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that's good for all parts. I mean, like you said, you're doing so much. Like, so how many, on a typical day when you are recording episodes, how many different shows are you recording? Usually, is it two the max?
No, like, so I record shows Tuesday through Thursday, and then we do pickups kind of on Friday if someone's been out.
That's what we're doing right now.
Somebody missed something. Yeah. And so we, on Tuesdays, I'll do two. On Wednesdays, I do two. And on Thursdays, I do three.
And those are shows. Within those shows, you typically have multiple episodes recording.
Right, yeah, two to three.
Yeah, because tech stuff, we tend to record two. Sometimes I'll do three if I'm feeling masochistic.
And all of our shows except for Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, because it's sort of paired with a video show that both of the hosts are pretty deeply involved with. They only do one episode a week, but everybody else does two episodes a week.
So not only are you recording all these, but you're also having to listen to them, edit them, and then publish them.
One thing we haven't really talked about that is, you know, I mean, I love all the shows and I, you know, there is a certain tedium that goes into like editing all this stuff. So sometimes I need things to kind of break the tedium.
Sure.
Which is usually comes in the form of like doing kind of custom music cues for different
right.
shows or like sound effects or like Foley kind of work and things like that. And so it doesn't happen all the time, but when it does, I tend to really like, you know, have a good time with it.
Yeah. And that's one of those things that, you know, we used to do that fairly frequently on tech stuff. We had a couple of different things that we'd like to do. Like, back in the day when I would yell out, listener mail, mm-hmm. we had a whole sound effect of a klaxon. But, mm-hmm. You know, these were things that were gathered, not mm-hmm. produced, right? And whereas you're talking about actually creating things, not just curating, but actually making them. And, you know, you're a musician and an audio engineer, so you tend to make these things. I have resisted the temptation to pepper the episodes with such things, but yeah, it's something I'm certainly interested in, having a little more soundscaping mm-hmm. in the episodes when it's warranted.
Well, and we've had some fun, you know, me and you doing some of these more soundscaped episodes. Again, a lot of it has to do with just like bandwidth of like what are you capable of producing in a
yeah.
week with all the shows that you do, all the shows that I do. But like so far we've done two for tech stuff. We've done the ASMR episode with Heather Feather,
right.
which, you know, was a little bit lighter on the sound design, but it was a lot of just pulling clips off YouTube and
yep.
kind of like sewing it all together with like a narration and then the interview bits, which is really fun. But then my favorite one, which is obviously, a little heavier on this stuff, is the Negative Land episode, where we kind of produced it more like a, almost like a Radiolab piece or like an NPR style, you know, it really has a kind of a rhythm and a flow to it, where
right.
it's, you know, a combination of sound effects and music clips and interview clips with Mark Hostler from Negative Land and a lot of his music, that all of which he owns and gave us, you know, full exclusive rights to use.
Right.
Which is, can be a problem as well, because we obviously have to get permission to
sure.
use stuff.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
we can't just willy-nilly take whatever we want.
Yeah, there's some podcasts out there that kind of fly under the radar and they do this stuff. But the bigger you get, the more you have to be cognizant mm-hmm. of that. So much so that even when you are, you know, we like to be extra cautious just to avoid any problems. Like, we don't want to have an experience where we have to take something down.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, it's the internet. Once yeah. it goes up, you know, it lives there some, so it's going to be living someplace forever.
Yeah.
So we tend to be very careful about that. And it's awesome having, you know, we have several people in the office who are musically inclined. They're musicians of some sort, or another, and many of them write music. So having that kind of opportunity to lean on folks and say, you know, I realize this is asking a lot, but if we could, you know, start making something custom for mm-hmm. us that is unique, as opposed to going out and finding something, would that be possible? So, I would say don't be surprised if a certain show's theme song changes eventually, because we've talked about it.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's obviously a matter of time and energy as well.
Yeah.
But, one of the things I wanted to mention, apart from your work here and also that you're a musician, is the fact that, I alluded to it earlier, you found very interesting uses for some of the more quirky noises that have popped up in the past. And I remember you had a look of intense glee on your face when you were first playing for me a track
mm-hmm.
that was sort of a percussive track that was completely made up of various mouth sounds and other noises that you had pulled from episodes, from all the stuff you edit, and had produced into a music track.
Yeah, like I said, I gotta break up the tedium somehow, so.
Yeah.
Keep myself entertained. Yeah, I basically, like, every time, you know, I don't always do it, but, you know, if there's like a odd vocal tick or like a click, like kind of like a, you know, kind
yeah.
of sound, which happens when people are catching their breath or swallowing or things
right.
like that. And again, like these mics, people are right up on them, so these sounds are really in your face
yeah.
and very, like, clear.
And
from, yeah.
probably something that unless that's your ASMR trigger, mm-hmm. you probably don't want to hear it.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, from a music production standpoint and, like, sampling and, like, electronic music is what I kind of have been into lately, these sounds are so hi-fi, like, on their own, if you just isolate them. And you don't even think about what the source is. Like, you know, there have been times where someone will bang on the table or someone will, you know, clear their throat or make, like, one of these little vocal ticks. And when I'm editing them, before I delete it, I will literally highlight it and then export it into a folder that I keep on Dropbox that I call blips. And it's just, I've got like probably 60 or 70 files in there now, all of which range in length from 1 second to, you know, maybe 10 seconds for like an interesting loop that I might make of like a good throat clear or something like that. And then I take it into, I use Ableton Live, which is a little bit more of an in-depth program than Audition. It's more made for like looping and making electronic music and stuff. And so I'll bring all these sounds in and put them like on a drum machine, patch or whatever, where I can trigger them on like a MIDI keyboard. And then I like, so, you know, instead of there being a snare sound, it might be someone clearing their throat, or instead of a kick drum sound, it might be that banging on the table. And then you can actually go in and shape them and repitch them and flip them backwards. You can do anything you can imagine with them. And so this is kind of what was created with that.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4. Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, how about we listen to a really quick comparison? I would like to hear, you know, sort of that early track that you played for me way back, me and Lauren and Joe, because it was at a Forward Thinking recording where you played it. And it might have even been, was that the old office, I think?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Why don't we listen to that, and then let's listen to something that where you've gone even a step further and kind of made sort of like a fully fledged song mm-hmm. out of something.
Thank you.
Yeah, so the first one there was, like you said, just sort of when I was experimenting with this and this kind of like, you know, finding different uses for these sounds. Because again, I wasn't trying to make it sound gross or like off-putting or anything. I literally just was fascinated by how cool these sounds could be on their own. And then especially when you combine 10 or 15 of them and like have them occupy different like rhythmic spaces or whatever. But then the second one was a little bumper you guys at Forward Thinking asked me to make where, you know, you're always saying, we'll see this technology in 20 to 40 years and right. say it so much that it was like, we need a little theme. So,
yeah.
You know, the vocal there is me just talking into my computer speakers. And then I made it into like a vocoder patch on an Ableton. But all of the percussion sounds are those mouth sounds. But again, I don't feel like they come off that way. I feel like it just sounds like kind of like an interesting, you know, polyrhythmic texture of like of sound mm-hmm. rather than like, oh, this is a jokey kind of thing. I don't think that's not what I'm intending to do at all. But
no, it comes across as I'm sure most people would wonder like, well, how did he make that noise? Like how did that sound? Well, how was that created? And, you know, it harkens back to our discussion with Hostler over at Negative Land, this idea of found sounds mm-hmm. and finding new ways to incorporate interesting sounds into a new work of art. Very similar to that. Mm-hmm. And kind of, I would call it like a descendant of that same sort of thing, except instead of going for full phrases mm-hmm. or even full words, you're finding individual elements of sound and putting them together.
Yeah, it's much more micro. And like what I'm doing, because I continue to do this, I'm basically developing like a palette of these sounds. And it's like the more I mess with it, you know, I try not to get like a bunch of the same kind of sounds, but if something pops out at me, then I'll grab it and put it in my folder and then like add it to my sound banks or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, this is one of a rare job where I can like do this kind of stuff and, you know, have a real job where I edit podcasts and, you know, get to come on and talk on podcasts and make music for them and also get to do this fun kind of nerdy stuff on the side. So that's pretty lucky.
Yeah. The fact that you've covered so many and granted, I'm sure a lot of the time when you're editing, what you're specifically listening out for are obvious mistakes. But assuming that, I assume that at least occasionally you can actually have a moment to enjoy what the various podcasts are talking about. Are there any particular subjects that podcasts have covered that you found really interesting and learned a lot?
I mean, I feel like I learn stuff all the time. It's just one of these things where it's just so much. It's just like yeah. this wealth of information, especially when you break it out into the different shows and the different brands that we do. I think stuff I'll never told you, always really, really interesting topics. And, I feel like, you know, everything that Tech Stuff covers is always really great and gives me kind of like a new appreciation for something that maybe I haven't heard of, like a new technology, like the Powerwall, for example.
Right.
That's really, well, that was on Forward Thinking.
That was Forward Thinking. Yeah. But same sort of thing. Like, yeah, very much like the Forward Thinking and Tech Stuff, I've argued mm-hmm. quite a bit, especially the podcasts are very closely mm-hmm. related. Forward Thinking, obviously, in many ways has a broader scope because it's anything that's future oriented. Yeah.
But it's just cool to like pull an item out of the news that I'm like interested in. And I, you know, it's so easy, especially when I'm working on a computer all day to like see headlines on Facebook or whatever. And then like, you know, oh, I'm going to bookmark that. Maybe I'll read the article eventually. And then I never do. But sometimes I don't because I'm already getting this in-depth, you know, like version of this headline from so many of the podcasts that I edit. So,
right.
You know, it's pretty, pretty interesting.
Yeah. And then occasionally our podcasts will all gravitate toward a similar topic over a certain span of time. Mm-hmm. You get to hear the same sort of stuff
yeah.
from different perspectives.
Yeah. Actually, today's Forward Thinking is on the M drive and today's Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is also on the M drive. And I edited both of those, like in the last couple of
yeah.
days. So it's kind of interesting to hear two yeah. different sides of it. One
and,
from
and
the
kind
of conspiracy angle and one from more of the pure, you know,
pure, yeah, exactly. Does this thing work? And if so, how? And mm-hmm. why doesn't anyone agree on that? Yeah. In that case, it was because the M drive was in the news and that's what prompted both of those shows to record. But that's, you know, it's really kind of, it is funny when that happens. We've also had that happen with other stuff like asteroid mining and a couple of other topics where, all the different shows or at least three or four of the shows would all kind of cover it within the same couple of months. So if people listen to all the How Stuff Works shows, they probably just thought we were all pitching the same ideas in a big room. We are all working very independently of each other for our various shows. So let me ask you this, you know, do you have any plans for any of the shows that are going. Like, I know that you've worked very closely with me to try and come up with interesting ways to keep tech stuff relevant, to keep finding new fun ways to produce the show, because obviously I have the only show right now that is a single host show. Have you worked with all the other shows in similar to a similar extent?
I mean, it really just depends. Like, sometimes the format just really works because, I mean, a lot of our shows are just sort of a traditional, it's like a couple people sitting down and having a conversation. It's almost like extraneous to like get too crazy with any kind of like sound effects and bumper cues and stuff like that. But then when you're doing more of a solo show, there are opportunities where you're like bringing in interview subjects where it's fun to kind of like bring in different sounds and bring in different clips and kind of add a little more context beyond just a conversation. But these shows have been around for so long that there's this like legacy involved of like, you know, just like, let's just have this sit down, no nonsense conversation about a topic and let's just like, you know, unpack it. And so sometimes it's just adding too many bells and whistles to it. It almost takes away from the kind of like thing that people are used to. And I think that's fine. But then there are certain shows that we are talking about kind of expanding and doing more of like a news, almost like an audio magazine kind of version of, and I don't want to give anything away, but like, you know,
But keep an ear out then because that sounds really exciting. And, also, since you mentioned the fact that occasionally I do interviews, I think it might be cool to explain to people how things are different if we have a remote person recording with us
in,
and you know, I've done interviews with like Tom Merritt or with Heather Feather, that sort of stuff. So explain how that's a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, ideally in those situations, you do what's called a tape sync. That's sort of like a news term, and what that refers to is like, okay, so you're on your end, and maybe you're talking to this person via Skype. Maybe you're talking to them on the phone. We actually have a phone system where you can pipe in phone audio to the headphone system here, and then whatever Jonathan says in the mic goes down the phone line to the person that's listening. So I am recording Jonathan's voice on this end and getting kind of a crappy sounding phone version of the person on the other end. But ideally what they would do is record their end in a higher quality setup with a microphone and like either a digital recorder or a computer. And a lot of the folks that Jonathan works with are podcasters, and so they kind of tend to have a little setup at home.
Yeah.
So what they'll do is they'll record their end, I'll record Jonathan's end, and then after the session wraps, they will send Jonathan or me the higher quality audio file. And then I will take it into Audition and just sync up the two. So a lot of times I just have to do that by ear, just kind of like move the audio into place until I can tell that the timing is right.
Right.
Sometimes we'll do a sync thing where we have them have both sides do a clap or something like that, and then you can line up that sharp line that the clap makes, and then you know that's where it starts, which is a technique they use in, you know, doing sound sync for film and video production.
Slating.
Well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
sure.
Where you have the clapboard and you say what the scene is, you do the clap that allows the editors to match up the audio track with the video track. Yeah, I've had to do that many times.
And I'll tend to record whatever the phone or Skype audio is as well, in case for whatever reason the main recording on the guest's end doesn't work, which we have had happen, and then we'll revert back to using the Skype audio or the phone audio, and it's not as great, but it still is fine most of the time, you know?
So now we all know that occasionally technology goes astray.
Mm-hmm.
And it's particularly difficult if you are editing one show on one machine and recording a show on another machine, to notice if something has gone wrong. Have there been, I know the answer to this, at least for my case, have there been any cases where, an episode has either, like, there's been a corrupt file or for some reason the thing stopped recording?
Mm-hmm.
What happens then?
Yeah, well, there was one occasion I know you're referring to where like maybe like 12-13 minutes of an episode, one of the mics wasn't recording for Forward Thinking. And that's a situation that's pretty specific to that show because again, it's like three different mics.
Right.
And
most of our shows, we just have the two.
Just have the two mics. And so I think what happened was, the third mic was set to the same input as one of the other two mics. And I didn't catch it until about 10 minutes into the recording. And that's obviously my bad. I'm a human.
Well, yeah, but, you know, we as podcasters make mistakes too. I'm not trying to call you out.
Oh, no. I think a more interesting example is, in our old office, we had an issue where we shared a space with an ad agency or ad department from a large multinational, let's say, television network.
Content provider.
Yeah. Sure. And so they were on one side of the office and we were on the other side of the office. And for whatever reason, the thermostat for the audio studio in this kind of makeshift call center space that we were crammed into for a while, was in somebody's office on the other side of the space, and we didn't have control over it.
Right.
And so what was happening, and it took forever for them to even realize it. So what was happening was
your desk was in that particular studio.
It was just in that studio. So yeah. I was just in there all the time. So it would get really, really hot and really, really nasty. And at one point, the computer that we were recording on in there got so hot that it shut itself down at the very end of a session.
Wow.
And the file didn't write whatever data it needed to write to the end of that recording to make a complete file, a package that you can like read on a computer. Mm-hmm. So, with the help of one of the smartest people I know, Casey Pegram, who is a videographer for Stuff You Should Know and Brain Stuff and What the Stuff, and is just an overall genius of a dude.
Yeah. He's also taken many of the production photos for a lot of our shows.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Really talented guy.
Very, very cool guy and very talented. He figured out how to like convert this file into like hex, like you take a hex editor, which actually like parses the file into visual data, which like if you looked at it, it'll make your head spin. It's like if you, let's say you took an audio file and dropped it into like a word processor. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of stuff you'd get where it's like, all these crazy X's and squares and
you're just staring
into the matrix. And he figured out like that there was this line of code that like was missing from the end of the file that is what it needed to like actually like be readable by, you know, the software that we use. And he figured out some program that like kind of reparsed the file and added that back in, and we were able to save it after this like disastrous, you know, shutdown from overheating computer.
Right. Yeah. So once in a while we, you know, technical issues happen. It's rare. It's really, really rare. And once in a while there'll be a mistake either. I mean, you know, we podcasters have made them. I've had to come in and re-record a segment when we realized that something we had said was not accurate or was a misrepresentation. Like we had essentially what it boils down to is more often than not, it stems from a misunderstanding where we think we've got a handle on something. And then the more we think about it, the more we realize, you know, I had assumed something that turns out not to be true. So more often than not, I've had to re-record something because of something we podcasters have done. It's pretty rare when I have to worry about
it. Or you'll
get
the QA back in and listening to it with a little bit of distance from having done the research and having like had to grind it out and come right in and record it, you start to realize that doesn't sound quite right.
Right.
You know, and then you kind of like go back and check yourself and then, and then you have to figure out how many times did I say this thing? Let's go.
There was one point where I remember, and it may have even been the one where we had to re-record because of Joe's mic, but there was one where we realized that we didn't want to have to record the whole show again. What we wanted to do was record the first half of the show and leave the second half alone, because it is a lot of work for everybody to come in and do the show once. To have to do it twice is tough, right? It's just it starts to hit on your psyche.
Oh, I know.
Right? And I remember that we sat down and we were like, okay, did we make any jokes in the second half that we have to set up in the first half? Because we do so many callbacks, right? And I'm pretty sure that was an episode where we were thinking, all right, what was the joke we made in the second half where we're going to have to make sure that we have the building blocks for that joke in the first half? And there's nothing that will kill a joke faster than having to
recreate it.
Yeah. Cause it was something that happened organically. We don't write our jokes down most of the time. We don't write our jokes down. Once in a while, our notes will have a joke in it and we're like, okay, this is too good to not say. We gotta add it. Most of the time we don't have our jokes written down. We just end up spontaneously coming up with it. So having to recreate spontaneity in a controlled and planned way it just does not feel right when you're doing it.
It's what they call soul crushing.
Yeah. But the cool thing, Noel, is that with your work, I don't think people would be able to tell.
No.
You know, it's only the people who have gone through it that are even able to realize it.
I try.
You do a great job. So, yeah, there's a ton of different shows you can listen to that, that have Noel's work on them. And, obviously we're going to continue working on new ways to soundscape, add in some stuff, maybe come up with a couple of other little clever, motifs or whatever, things that I'm really looking forward to. Obviously it'll be dependent upon Noel's spare time. Mm-hmm. Of which there is precious little.
But speaking of spare time, before we wrap up, I just wanted to say, you were part of a fun little spare time extracurricular thing that I did with some of the other podcasters here. That's like totally How Stuff Works related, but it was like a Lovecraftian radio horror drama. And, Jonathan got to play a little part.
Yeah, it was about a waiter who tries to serve some drinks. And
that's what the whole thing's about,
that's
right?
What the whole thing's about. That was my part.
Super fascinating.
Two lines. I knew it. Yeah.
But that's an example of like, okay, so I've got all this stuff that I do for work. And then to like add in another audio project that involved me staying up like from like 10 p.m. to like 8 a.m. on a Sunday to like knock this thing out. And I'm super proud of it. And, you know,
Did Ben write that?
Ben
wrote it, and it starred a lot of the people from How Stuff Works doing various roles. And honestly, like, it was something when I heard about it, I thought, it's a shame that I didn't know about that earlier. That would have been fun to be a part of that. And then at the last minute, I think someone fell through and you needed a person to just record a couple of lines. I was happy to jump in.
You have to know too, like, I mean, it was like a deadline was approaching.
Yeah.
We were just trying to knock this thing out, and everyone, even to get it done, it was such a stretch for everyone. But I'm not going to name drop it too hard, but check out the Atlanta Fringe Festival audio component if you guys are interested, and you can probably figure out which one it is.
Radio drama is one of those things that has a special place in my heart. For the long time, I was a member of the board of the Atlanta Radio Theater Company, and I also wrote several pieces and performed in several pieces of theirs. So actually, if you go, this is a non-How Stuff Works podcast plug, but if you go and check out the ARTC podcast, that's the Atlanta Radio Theater Company podcast, they collect a bunch of their various live performances, and they put it out as a podcast. And if you listen, if you do a search for my name, you'll see that I've done quite a few with them way back in the day. I haven't recorded with them for a few years now,
check that out.
Some of the stuff I've written also shows up there. So
nice.
Yeah, it's pretty, pretty funny, weird and goofy stuff. So a lot of science fiction, fantasy and horror for those guys. How many bands do you play in right now, or just one?
Two.
Two.
I play, both of them are kind of based out of Atlanta and Athens, Georgia. One of them is called Brothers, and the other one is called Blue Blood, and we're actually doing our record release show tonight in Atlanta at the Earl.
It's, by the time you hear this, it is too late.
I know, it's true.
But it would have been, you would have loved to have been there.
It is a thing. It's a thing I do.
Yeah, but that's awesome, you know, and I love the fact that we can kind of get a glimpse into some of the stuff that the folks here at How Stuff Works are doing outside of their jobs, because, you know, it speaks to the sort of people who work here that many of us are working in a very creative industry. And either we are creative in the sense that we're the ones writing and then maybe talking about whatever content, or we're editing and shaping that content, producing it as well. Because there are very specific duties for an editor versus a producer, and you have to do both, and a publisher. Mm. So there's multiple ones there. You know, the fact that we all have this as our jobs, and then many of us outside of work continue to do that stuff in other ways, I think it says a lot about the type of people who work here, which is pretty awesome. And I mean, pretty much everybody you've ever heard on a podcast, it falls into that category.
Absolutely.
Somewhere.
Oh, for sure.
So, Noel, thank you so much for sitting down and talking with us. Do you have any, for people who are maybe trying to go out there and do a podcast, you know, they're working with whatever software, maybe it's Audacity because it's a free piece of software.
Oh man, it's easy, because there's so many really inexpensive little audio interfaces you can get, or even if you just have a computer that has like an 1/8-inch microphone jack, you can get a pretty decent mic and just get like a transformer or a turnaround cable that'll turn your XLR into like the right plug to go into your laptop. But I mean, if you look online, there are so many, like between maybe $50 to $75 audio interfaces that'll take an XLR microphone connection, which is what the, you know, higher pro mics use. And then, yeah, I mean, a GarageBand works great. A lot of Mark Maron uses GarageBand to record the WTF podcast, which is one of like the most popular podcasts on iTunes.
Yeah.
And tons of people use it. And there's even like a podcast exporting option where you can do all the metadata for the MP3 and all that stuff. And then, like you said, Audacity is great. It's totally free. It works fantastic. And it's just, it's pretty much wide open. You know,
yeah.
you can get, a decent microphone for maybe less than $100 and then, you know, just get started.
Yeah. And there are a ton of hosting, sites out there too. I mean, obviously we have the benefit of working with a major company, but,
SoundCloud. I mean, you can just put all your stuff on SoundCloud.
Yep. You can do it there.
Anybody can contribute something to iTunes. I mean, there's tons of little
Stitcher
fledgling,
fledgling
podcasts on iTunes.
I do, I personally use Libsyn for one of my podcasts as a hosting service, but you could also use things like archive.org. Mm-hmm. They have a hosting service that's free.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of different places out there if you want to try your hand at this kind of thing and kind of get an idea of what Noel goes through whenever he has to fix a podcast. I've gotten obsessed when I do mine. I have to learn to let go because I get obsessed with things like,
sure,
let me take out all the uhs.
Yes. I mean, and just one last thing. The podcasting landscape in general is so wide open right now. Cause I mean, obviously there's a lot of established brands and stuff that people may know about, but in general, the idea of podcasting is that there's just something for everybody.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, while it may seem like oversaturated, there's always room for some new way to do something or some new way to talk about something. And a big part of what turns people onto podcasts is that they can just find random things and just like have a good time exploring and finding new things. So I would never be discouraged by like, oh, there's too much stuff out there.
I would always encourage people. I'm like, I would say, think about something you are really excited about, really passionate about, and you'd love to talk about this stuff. Whatever that might be, it doesn't matter what the subject is, but you just really like talking about it. You could have endless conversations. That should be your podcast subject, because chances are there are other people out there in the world who are just as passionate as you are and will find that podcast interesting.
Yeah.
The danger, I would say, is trying to figure out where the demand is and then trying to create a podcast to meet that demand, because unless it's something you're already interested in, it turns into real hard work real fast.
Oh, yeah.
So, Noel, thank you again. And, guys, if you have any suggestions for future episodes of Tech Stuff, whether it is another guest that I should have on the show, a guest host who should sit here and talk with me about something technical or a subject itself, let me know. Send me an email. That address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. Or drop me a line on Facebook, Twitter, or Tumblr. The handle at all three of those is TechStuffHSW, and I'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.